What's going on, Bridges? How are we doing today? Good. I can tell what generation you're all from based on when the songs come on, what songs your head starts bobbing to. It's pretty obvious. Well, hey, we are in the middle of this series. Really, it's been a great series so far, hasn't it? You can say yes, otherwise it feels awkward if you don't. But it's been this great series of us looking at the book of Daniel, a book that is so practical and applicable, and taking what God was teaching Daniel and his friends in a workplace environment and applying it to our own works, our own lives, the responsibilities that we have sort of Monday through Friday, if you will, and looking at how is it that we worship and glorify and bring honor to God in everything we do, not just what we do on Sunday. And so today I'm going to kind of continue on this series, kind of picking up a little bit where we took off last week. There's going to be a little bit of overlap from last week. But looking at this question of how is it that we continue to glorify God when we're in the middle of the fire, when we're struggling, when we're having hard times in our lives. And I think that's something that we all can relate to. It's something we've all experienced. I think it's going to be really pretty relevant for all of us. And as I was thinking about pain, and I was just kind of thinking back of different memories, and one memory I had was when I was in high school. I remember a couple of my friends and I, we went down to a flea market, and you can buy anything at a flea market, right? So as a high school kid, that was like the coolest place ever. And we found this set of boxing gloves down there at the flea market. Now, none of us had any boxing experience, but that didn't keep us from starting our own little backyard like boxing club with these boxing gloves. And at the time, I weighed about 275 pounds. I was a big kid. And like many big kids, I was not exactly the most coordinated big kid. I couldn't throw, accurate punches or dodge or bob and weave, none of that. So whenever we boxed, my thing was, as I would try to throw these big punches, but most of the time, I would just get beat up. Right? That was how I boxed. I would just sit there, and because I weighed like 270 pounds, I could take a punch pretty good. So I would box these little guys, and they would just wail on me, and I would just take punch after punch to the nose, hardly dodging any of them, with the hope that maybe after 5 minutes or so, they would tire themselves out to where I could get a punch in, right? And I would just wait there, just bleeding for my opportunity. And as I talk to some of you, and I think about some of just the workplace environments of the Silicon Valley, I think some of you might feel a little bit like that's your workplace. Like you go to work every day just to get punched in the nose, with the hope that someday you might achieve something or you might get through it. And it's abusive sometimes. It's tough, right? And we all know what it's like to be kind of in that pressure cooker of a work environment that just day in and day out, we're feeling railed on. I mean, we're here in the Silicon Valley, and it seems like businesses come and go so frequently. And it seems like most people I know have experienced getting laid off at least once in their lifetime. They know the pain of having a job only to lose that job and then to be unemployed and to be stressing out about bills and then to have to put themselves out and to find a new job. Or maybe for some of you, experiencing the fire in your life isn't a work-related thing. Maybe it's more of a health-related thing. That you've got health issues, and you've had health issues for a long time, and every time you think you get on top of one health thing, another thing seems to pile on. Or maybe it's our marriages, our relationships. It's something that we can all kind of get our hands around, our head around. Now, if you're here today, though, and you're going, oh, man, what a bummer of a message this is. My life is pretty good right now. I'm not living in the fire. That's okay, too. In fact, I just got back from like 10 days of vacation, so I'm definitely not living in the fire right now. I'm feeling great. Thanks, CJ. Appreciate it. My life is pretty good. I got back to work yesterday, and I was like, wow, maybe I should think about this message I wrote 2 weeks ago. And I came into the office, I started working on it, and it's like, I'm happy to be here. Yet, I think that this is actually a really good time for me to start thinking about these things, because the way that I respond, the way that I build my values when I'm not being tested, when I'm not being challenged, affects the way I live my life when I am being challenged, right? And so I think for all of us, this is very relevant, whether we're in the fire or whether life is great right now. So let me give you a little bit of background to where we're at. Again, if you were here last week, Fred did a great job of kind of unpacking this story. So we're gonna overlap a little bit from where we were last week. So King Nebuchadnezzar is the most powerful king in the most powerful empire in the world at the time. This guy he's on top of the world. He's got it all together. And yet God made it clear to King Nebuchadnezzar through Daniel, through this dream, that his power was limited, that his kingdom was going to crash down, and that even though right now he was experiencing kind of being on top, that wasn't going to last forever. And so King Nebuchadnezzar, being a dictator, being kind of power hungry, does, I think, what a lot of kind of our stereotypical dictator, power hungry folks might do. And instead of going, wow, maybe I should just submit myself to God and try to learn what God's doing in my life, he goes, all right, I got a plan. Here's my plan. I am going to make people worship me. Because if people worship me, then I become God, and then maybe I can hold on to this kingdom, hold on to this power that I have. So he builds this giant statue, and he lets everybody know. He goes, all right, here's the situation, Babylon. Every once in a while, not that often, but every once in a while, we're going to have these big parades. We're going to get all the bands together, the horns, the trumpets, guys banging the drums. We're going to kind of march through town. When you hear the parade coming, just look up to that awesome statue I built up there on the mountain. Everybody bow down, worship me for a little bit. Then life goes back to normal. You can carry on with your jobs and everything else. No big deal. But if you don't bow down and worship me, I'm just going to go ahead and burn you alive, okay? So no big deal. I suggest worshiping me. It'll be a lot easier for both of us. I'll get the power that I think I deserve, and you can just go along with your life. And there's these three guys, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who are friends of Daniel, right? We've seen them kind of throughout. God has been working stuff in their life. And they look at this situation, and they go, yeah, King, we can't do that. We've got this deep hope and trust and this relationship with God, and we're not willing to sacrifice it to just go along with your thing. We don't think you're God. We don't think you are worthy of being worshiped. So we're not going to bow down. And what a tough choice this must have been. What they're saying is, we're going to make this choice that we know could end in us being tortured to death by fire. That even if you don't kill us, it's going to be really bad for us. We could lose our jobs. We could go through all kinds of pain. But that painful decision is better than the alternative, because our relationship with God is too important for us. Have you ever been in a situation where you've got two hard decisions to make, right? And both of them, you know, are going to be painful? I think we can all relate to that, right? Where if I do this, it's going to hurt. And if I do this, it might hurt even worse. The other day, I was up riding my bike up Mission Peak, and I had gotten to the top, and I was coming back down, and I was just tired. It was one of those days I wasn't feeling very good, and I decide I'm going to do this trail called Panorama Trail. It's a trail I hadn't ridden in quite a while. So I go, and you kind of go down into this valley, and you come up onto this ridge, and I look ahead on the trail, and I can see that the whole trail is just overgrown with thistles, right? 4 feet tall. There's hardly any trail there. There's just these sticker bushes, you know, with just these sharp little tiny stickers all the way down for about a mile down this trail. And I know that that option is going to be a painful option. But I was tired, and I didn't want to have to climb back up to get back over to the main trail. So you got a decision to make, right? Do I do the painful option or the painful option? And I picked the painful option, because it was downhill, and I went for like a mile. I'm going through these sticker bushes, and at the end, like, I just hurt everywhere. I had little stickers in my hands and my gloves, and my legs were bleeding, and I couldn't find any, like, place that it was actually cut. It was like an inkless tattoo for about 5 minutes, you know? But there are those options that we make, and these three guys have a choice to make that's far more painful than that. So check out what they do. So, this is in Daniel chapter 3, verse 16. If you got a Bible, you want to turn it open. Otherwise, we're going to put it up there on the screen behind us. So we'll go ahead and follow along. So here we go. So it says this. It says, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego replied to him, King Nebuchadnezzar, we do not need to defend ourselves before you in this matter. If we are thrown into a blazing furnace, the God we serve is able to deliver us from it, and he will deliver us from your majesty's hand. But even if he does not, We want you to know, your majesty, that we will not serve your gods or worship the images of gold you have set up. King Nebuchadnezzar was furious with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and his attitude towards them changed. He ordered the furnace be heated 7 times hotter than usual and commanded some of the strongest soldiers in the army to tie up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and to throw them into the blazing furnace. So these men, wearing their robes and their trousers and their turbans and other clothes, were bound and were thrown into the blazing furnace. And the king's command was so urgent and the furnace was so hot that the flames of the fire killed the soldiers that took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And these 3 men, firmly tied, fell into the blazing furnace. Wow, what a place these 3 find themselves in. Now, I would hope, and I think it's a pretty fair hope that I can trust in, that none of you have ever been before an evil king that threatened to throw you into a furnace, right? But we've all been in situations where we are standing kind of on the edge of an emotional furnace, a painful situation, and we're looking at it, and we're out of good options, we're out of easy options, and it's just going to be painful. Some of you might be there now. Some of you can remember a time that that's been. And so as we look at this passage, the question I want us to ask this week is, how do we find purpose? How do we find meaning when we are living in the midst of the fire, right? How is it that when we are experiencing some of the most painful experiences in our life, how can we actually find purpose and meaning? The other day, I was listening to the radio, and there was two kind of academics on. They were both from kind of an atheistic, kind of a post-Christian worldview. And they were actually kind of celebrating the fact that we live in a post-religious world. They're saying this is great. People aren't confined by religious beliefs anymore. People don't still hold to kind of a belief in a higher power. But then as they were talking, they actually began to kind of lament the fact that one of the challenges with living in a post-religious world is that we live also then in a post-meaning world. That people have kind of lost their sense of value, their sense of purpose, why they live, what they exist for. And I was thinking about how true that is. That living kind of in a post-religious world kind of feels good sometimes when life is going well, right? When things are going well for you, it's kind of nice not to be constrained by the morals and the ethics of a higher power, of trying to serve something other than yourself. But all of a sudden, when we feel ourselves in the pain of struggle, of suffering, it's when we long for that meaning. We long for that purpose. We long for something bigger than just ourselves, something bigger than just the moment. And in this passage, I see 3 guys who have that purpose and that meaning. And that meaning and that purpose comes from this deep, devoted relationship they have with God, this powerful force in their lives that gives them hope and purpose. So how is it that we find this meaning and purpose? And the first point that I see here in this passage is that we should bet on our relationship with God. That it's not a safe bet, but it's a good bet. And here's kind of where I see that in this text. These 3 guys had everything. They had positions. They were actually political. They'd been promoted to powerful positions within the Babylonian government, the most powerful empire in the world. We're sure that they lived in nice houses. We know that they ate some of the best food that was available in the land. They had like the latest model of camel or whatever made you cool in that day. They had it all. They had no reason to look for purpose outside of what was right in front of them. They were doing just fine. And yet, when all that is put on the line, when all that comes up in jeopardy, they look to the king and they say, you know what, king? We're willing to lose all of this. We're willing to lose our position, our jobs, our families, our houses, even our lives, because our relationship with God is more important to us than all of those other things. And this really is the hope that we have as Christians also. This belief that God loves us so much that he gave his son to die for us. That us, left to our own devices, we are all evil and wicked people. And if you don't think you are, you probably need to ask somebody next to you if you are. They'll probably tell you that you're not as good as you think you are. At least I'm not as good as I want to pretend like I am. And because of that, because we are wicked people, because we have evilness in our lives, that we are not able to be in relationship with a perfect and loving God. And yet God loved us so much that he sent his son to die for us, to be a substitute for the punishment that we deserve, that he took that on so that we can have eternal, everlasting relationship with him. And that is an awesome story that we hold. And because of that, we can look at all the circumstances in front of us, our jobs, our lives, our struggles that we are going through, and know that I can have confidence, I can have hope in my relationship with God, that it is worth putting my effort and my investment in that, because that is what matters. That is what lasts. And I think that's what's happening with these three. They've seen the work of God in their life. They trust him, and they say, okay, we're willing to invest this time. We're willing to trust him because we know that he can save us. And even if he doesn't save us, then we still trust him because that's still a better option for us. That's a powerful statement, right? I mean, I could see them saying, okay, we're just going to trust that God's going to save us and that's it. And they go, but you know what? Even if that doesn't work out that way, even if we burn in the fire, we're okay with that. And the king hears this and just goes nuts. Like, this just drives the king over the wall. He just becomes enraged at these three. And I think it's hard for us to really understand that because we just don't live in this culture. We're patriotic in our country, right? In a couple of days, we're going to celebrate 4th of July, and we're all going to wave our flags around and blow stuff up, and that's how we celebrate the birth of our country. But our patriotism is not connected with our religious beliefs for most of it. It's not connected with the core focus of our ideology of who we are as people. And yet in their day, in ancient Babylon, it would have been the king was God and the God was king and he ruled the country and the country was his. And if you were part of Babylon, you were part of that worldview, that belief system. You had an identity because of that. And so when they refused to bow down to the king, that just blew him over the edge. That would be maybe like for some of us seeing videos or seeing somebody burning a flag and stomping on a Bible and spitting on your grandma's picture. I don't know. It's all of those kind of combined in one and more so. So the king decides he's going to make an example of these three. He loses it. He says, all right, here's what we're going to do. I want you to get that fire going 7 times hotter than it needs to be. That's a little interesting to me because if you wanted to like hurt somebody, you would think a cooler fire might be the way to go, right? Let's put them in the southern barbecue over there and let's just slow cook them for a while. That's going to really show these guys what's up. But he wants to set an example. He wants everybody throughout Babylon to see what's going on and go, whoa, don't mess with the king. And I was doing some research on this and there's not a lot of trees in Babylon. It's kind of out there in the desert. So all of their buildings were built out of bricks. They had these beautiful brick buildings. And so they believe that in those days, throughout Babylon, there would have been these brick kilns all over the place that they would use to fire their bricks. And it would have been just this vivid reminder. Every time you walked around, every time you saw a brick kiln, you would say, oh, I better respect the king because I don't want to find myself in one of those. Remember what he did to Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? They were good guys, too. We all liked them, and he burned them 7 times hotter. So that's the plan. He says, okay, we're going to burn them to death. Grab these guys right now. Tie them up. So they grab the guys, and they're in such a hurry to tie them up that they don't even take their clothes off. Now, they didn't have Walmart back then. They couldn't go down and get a $5 cheaply made t-shirt. All the clothes were handmade. So if you were going to kill somebody, you would actually strip them naked so that you could take their clothes from them. Right? That's just, there was value in that stuff. But they're in such a hurry that they don't even do that. They don't even go through the normal, like, ritual of execution. They just tie these guys up and they get them all bound up. And then the king says, all right, I don't want the little guys, the little guards. We got some weak guards around here. We don't want to have any risk. So I want the strongest guards in our army to take these guys and chuck them in the fire. Right? And so they gather up the strongest guys. And they bind them up tight, and they start walking them towards this fire. And they get this fire must be just piping hot. And as the guards are getting him towards the edge of the fire, they're probably coughing and they're trying to hold their breath. Smoke must be just billowing out of this thing. And they get the three guys up there and they kind of knock him into the fire. And then even the guards fall backwards and die. That must have been a scary scene. I'm not sure I exactly know what this would have been like, but I'm kind of letting you in a little bit to my childhood, so don't judge me too much for this. But besides boxing, another thing we like to do is we had a friend who had a farm. And so we would go around town and we'd borrow shipping pallets. Well, we probably didn't borrow them, but we'd get shipping pallets from various places. And we'd stack them up and we'd light them on fire. And they burned really good and hot and it was fun, right? And I remember one time we went and we gathered like 20 shipping crates, or not shipping crates, but shipping pallets. And we stacked them on top of each other and poured diesel fuel on them. And we lit them on fire. And this flame was just massive. And after a little bit, we're like, oh, that's cool. Maybe we should get this thing out. This is a little bit out of control. And I remember we went and we grabbed the garden hose and we couldn't even get the water to the fire because we couldn't get close enough to the fire because the fire was so hot that it was burning us just getting close to it. And I think that's a little bit the scene that's going on here is that everybody watching, they're feeling their face feels like it's melting just because this furnace is so hot. And Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego feel themselves bound up, carried into this furnace. And it makes me realize that so often in my life, I spend my life running away from pain, trying to avoid things that hurt me. And here I see these three trusting God, even if it means trusting God going into the pain. And I think there is a clear biblical message for all of us that the Christian life is not just about pain avoidance, that we shouldn't avoid, that we shouldn't fight the pain. Because God wants to work through us, that he wants to use the pain in our life to shape us and to mold us and to create us into the people that he's designed us to be. And that so often, those experiences in our life when we go through the pain are those experiences where we learn to trust God, those experiences where we look back on and go, wow, in that moment, I realized what God was doing in my life. Now, I don't think this means that we have to go around looking for pain. Like, if your life is pretty good right now, that's great. Be cool with that. Don't feel like, I mean, I've met people out there that if they're not hurting, if they're not going through crisis, they feel like they're not doing it right. You know, like, oh man, I better hurt. My faith doesn't make me hurt, so I got to go offend somebody so that way I can feel persecution or whatever might be happening, you know. And I don't think that's the case. But I also think that there is just a reality that when we live life, we experience pain. And pain is unavoidable in our life. And we have a choice of how we're going to approach that pain. One, we can just try to avoid it. We can run from it. Or we can trust God in the middle of it. Back to my stupid example of going down Mission Peak on my bike in the Panorama Trail. About halfway through that trail, I stopped. And I kind of looked back up and I realized that climbing back up that trail was going to be way more painful than letting gravity just drag me through it. And I realized at that point, okay, I might as well just laugh about this because this is just stupid. And I just kind of, it almost was freeing to just kind of just go with it. Have you ever been in those experiences? Again, this is not super painful. I'm not trying to say this is the same as struggling with a major illness or something. But there almost was this relief when I kind of gave up on just trying to fight it and just say, okay, here we go. This is going to hurt, but it's going to make a good story. I could preach about it someday. And I think there's this place in our lives where we come to and say, okay, God, I'm going to trust you in this. I don't get it. I don't understand it. But I'm not going to fight this. Teach me what you want to teach me through this experience. So let's keep reading. Let's see how this story continues on. So in verse 24, it says, the three guys are in the fire. The smoke must be clearing. This must be a little bit later. And the King Nebuchadnezzar comes up to the fire to kind of check out what's going on. It says, and King Nebuchadnezzar was astonished, and he rose in haste. He declared to his counselors, did we not cast three men bound into the fire? And they answered and said to the king, true, O king. He answered them and said, but I see four men unbound walking in the midst of the fire, and they're not hurt. And the appearance of the fourth is like the son of the gods. Nebuchadnezzar came near the door of the burning furnace He declared, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, servants of the Most High God, come out, come here. And Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came out of the fire, and the satraps and the prefects and the governors and the king's counselors gathered together, and they saw that the fire had not had any power over the bodies of these men. The hair of their head was not singed, and their cloaks were not harmed, and no smell of fire came upon them. How wild must this have been? The fire kind of dies down. This king, I don't know what he was hoping to see in the fire. He kind of goes over to the edge of the fire. He's going to look down in there and kind of see his handiwork. I imagine he's expecting to see just a pile of ashes laying down there in the bottom. And he sees people walking around kind of in the smoke. He probably rubs his eyes a little bit. He's looking. Starts counting them. 1, 2, 3, 4. Wait, 4? Is that one of the guards? Is that Bill down there? What? Wait, that guy's all shiny. He's weird looking. He looks like a son of the gods. What is going on here? And so then he calls out. He says, okay, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, come out of here. 4th guy, you just stay down there. You just stay shiny and burn a little bit longer. I don't want to talk to you. That's probably a smart move on his behalf. And he calls these 3 up. And everybody gathers around, all the important people of all of Babylon. They gather around him, and they start pulling on their cloaks a little bit. They start looking at him like, that's weird. Look, at his coat's not even burned. Start smelling their hair. Like, look, their hair's not even burned. If I barbecue, I lose, like, all my knuckle hair, right? That's just part of my process of barbecuing. And these guys are in the middle of a fire that's been heated 7 times hotter than needs to be. And their hair's not even burnt. Then they start smelling them. They don't even smell like fire. Again, I just got back from camping, and I opened up my bag, and what do you think it smells like, right? What does it always smells like? Campfire. For weeks, my bag will smell like campfire. And these guys come out of the fire, and they don't even smell burnt. They don't even smell like fire. No smoke on them. So what's the moral of the story? The moral of the story is, if you really, really trust God, you will experience no pain, right? No, I don't think that's the moral of the story. Sometimes we look at that and we think that, right? Like, oh man, if I was just more faithful like these 3, then God would really protect me. No, I don't think that's the case, because I know people who I see that are so faithful and so godly and yet are experiencing incredible pain in their life. So I think looking at this, saying that that's the application, isn't maybe the right thing. But I think one thing I see in this is that when we are in the middle of the furnace, when we are struggling, to remember that we are not alone in the furnace. That when we are experiencing the worst pain of our life, to know that God is with us. As I was reading through this thing, one of the things that kind of stood out to me is, we know that Nebuchadnezzar saw 4 people down there. He was the one that says there's 4 and one looks like the sons of the gods. But we don't know if Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego knew that there was a 4th person in the fire. Maybe they did. Maybe they felt the care of that 4th person, but maybe they didn't. And I can relate to that, because there are times in my life when I'm going through really hard things that I feel completely alone, that I feel like God has left me, that he has abandoned me, and I'm on my own trying to work through this situation. And to know that God is with me, that God is caring for me, even if I can't see him, even if I can't experience him, even if I can't feel him in my life, that he is there, he is guiding me, that he is protecting me, that he's caring with me. In fact, that is the story of the gospel. The story of the gospel of the Bible is that God didn't just stay up in heaven distant, that God came down to earth, that he became human, that he walked among us, that he experienced the same pain and struggle and frustration and betrayal that we all know so well, so that he could bring us salvation. And that he has left us his very spirit to indwell and to live in our life. That God is with us, that we are not alone. And I think some of us need to be reminded of that this morning. That no matter what we're going through, that God is with us. And I think this is also true for those of us that life is going really well right now. Sometimes when life is going well, I can kind of feel like, all right, everything's going good. God must be worried about other people who are going through real problems. You know, he's over there and he's dealing with Fritz, because Fritz really needs God's help, but I'm cool, so I'm on my own. But even in that, scripture over and over shows us God with us, standing beside us. So as we We are looking for purpose and meaning in the struggles of our lives, in the pain that we're going through. Know this, know that you're not alone in that. That when, as we put our trust and faith in God, that it's not a God that's somewhere up in heaven, not worried about us, but it is a God who is there with us, a God who is standing with us. And it's in this, it's miraculous. In fact, it's pretty cool. Theologians for 2,000 years have tried to figure out who that fourth dude was in the fire, right? Some people say, oh, it must have been an angel. Other people say it's like the Spirit of God or it's some pre-incarnate Jesus. And I don't think any of that matters. I think what matters is not that we fully understand how God's presence is with us, but we know it's there, that we know he's caring for us. So let's continue reading. Let's see how this passage continues to go. So in verse 28, it says, Nebuchadnezzar answered and said, blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent his angel and delivered his servants who trusted in him. And he has set aside the king's commandment, and he yielded up their body rather than to serve and worship any god except for their own God. Therefore, I make a decree. Any people, nation, language that speaks against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be torn limb for limb and their houses laid to ruin. For there is no other God who is able to rescue in this way. Then the king promoted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego into the province of Babylon. So the king here, he's got kind of a choice to make. He's got these three guys that he sentenced to death, and God has miraculously saved them. So he can either kill them. Clearly, they're fireproof, so maybe he goes, takes a sword to them or a crossbow or, I don't know, some other way of killing him. Or he recognizes what God is doing. And at some level, he recognizes what God is doing in this moment. Now, we know from the story of King Nebuchadnezzar that he doesn't really get it. He just kind of gets it in this moment. But in this moment, he goes, wow. Blessed be your God. Your God is something special. There's something going on with this relationship you have. Of course, then he takes it a step too far, right? He's kind of a bloodthirsty dude. He's like, and anybody who doesn't trust your God, we're going to tear them limb from limb and destroy their family. I got to imagine Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego are like, oh, come on, let's just settle down a little bit. Let's just let's stop while we're ahead here. And he promotes them, and he goes on to worship this God that they worship. And I think this just is that reminder to all of us that even in the midst of our struggle, even in the midst of our pain, that God is able to work those things together for his glory. That's the story we see throughout the book of Daniel, that ordinary people who are just going about their business, doing their job, trying to be faithful in their relationship with God, that God uses those ordinary people to make himself famous, to take the most powerful king in the world at the time, to make that king say, wow, your God is something special. And we need to remember that when we are faithful to God, when we are trusting in him, when we are walking with him, even in the midst of our struggle, that God can use that in powerful ways. In fact, I think some of the most powerful stories I've heard of knowing of people trusting in God and God working in their lives comes through people's struggle, not through their successes. When people are hurting and God is with them and they continue to trust in him. I was thinking about that this week, just throughout kind of Christian history, all the people who have suffered and because and through their suffering, God has really made famous. I was thinking of a dude that many of you have probably read some of his books, Dietrich Bonhoeffer, right? He was a pastor in the midst of kind of the rise of Adolf Hitler and Nazi Germany. And instead of going the way that so many of the churches in Germany were going at that time, he decided to stand against the brokenness of that worldview, to stand against the hate and the bigotry and the ugliness, and to say, no, we are going to stand firm in Scripture, even if it means persecution. And because of his beliefs, he was persecuted deeply. He was died for his faith. And in the midst of all that, he wrote a book that I think many of us have maybe have read and have found incredibly encouraging. It's a book called Cost of Discipleship. And I was thinking about that book. I wonder if that book would have meant so much to me and meant so much to many of you who have read it if he had never gone through struggle, right? If he had written that book from some, you know, tropical island sipping Mai Tais, you know, on a pension or whatever. I don't know if we would have necessarily understood the depth and the truth of what God was working out in his life. And so maybe the struggle, the challenges that we're going through, maybe they're not meaningless. Maybe they're not purposeless. But I also know that when I'm struggling, and I'm sure when you're struggling, especially if you're in the midst of that struggle now, it's very difficult to see any purpose or meaning in that, right? It just feels overwhelming. And that's okay, but to know that God is working out his purpose, that God is making himself famous, he's making himself known to a world that needs him, that longs for his peace and restoration, and he wants to do that even through the struggle and the pain that we're all going through. And not only is he asking us to do that alone, that he is doing that with us, that he is guiding us and he's standing with us and protecting us and moving us along. So we're going to wrap up and we're going to have kind of a little bit more time of worship and reflection after this. And maybe the question for all of us this morning is, okay, God, what are the areas in my life that I need to grow in trusting you, that I need to shore up in my relationship with you so that even in hard times that I can stand firm? And what are maybe the practices? What are the practical things I can do today to grow in that relationship? So let's pray. God, we thank you that you are a God who is with us, that we are not alone to suffer. We're not alone to walk through this very painful world and just figure things out on our own, but that you are there guiding us and teaching us, that you have a plan for us. Help us see that plan, God. Help us trust you. Help us know you. And God, I pray for everybody here who is struggling, who's in work environments that are just abusive and toxic, who are maybe in relationships that are painful or struggling with sicknesses. I just pray that they can experience and see your presence in their life, that you reveal that to them this week. In Jesus' name, amen.
Thank you for listening to the Bridges Community Church Sermon Podcast. Bridges Community Church is located in the San Francisco Bay Area in Fremont, California. To know more about Bridges Community Church, please go to our website at bridgescc.org.